RSV Academy. Talking about RSV with Lewis Bont. The RSV Odyssey, a masterclass.
Hello and welcome to the RSV Academy podcast, a scientific podcast brought to you by the Healthcare Research Institute of Santiago de Compostela and the University of Santiago, an academic initiative where we delve into the latest knowledge, research, and developments in the RSV world. My name is Federico Martinón Torres, and I will be your host today, a day in which we are thrilled to have a distinguished guest with us, my dearest friend, Professor Louis Vaughn, head of pediatrics at the University Medical Center in Utrecht, and also the founder of ResVinet, and also, of course, a renowned pediatrician and a world-leading expert in the field of RSV. Welcome, Louis.
Good evening, Federico. It's very nice to be here with you.
Thank you. So I think it's important just to remind the audience that Professor Bont has been instrumental in advancing our understanding of RSV. His work has been pivotal in shaping the global research agenda on RSV, and his insights have been invaluable in the development of potential vaccines and treatments. And today in this podcast, we will be discussing some of the most recent literature in the field of RSV research and asking Louis Vaughn, Professor Bont, some breakthrough questions based on his own studies and experience. But before we start, I really like to ask you a very first question. Why and when did you decide to focus on RSV? When did you decide to put all your energy on the RSV topic?
Thank you, Federico. That was very long time ago. About 30 years ago, I started my PhD with Professor Kimpen. He was at the time a world leader in RSV research, and I was intrigued by a virus that causes so much disease in young babies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I knew that something was there. So let's get it started. The first thing I'd like to tell you about is the burden of disease. You have been involved in several studies related to the global disease burden of RSV, but can you share some insights on the global impact of the virus? How do you see the virus compared to other pathogens? How did you benchmark RSV in comparison to any other microorganism?
Right. So it is very unusual that so much disease is caused by a virus that is so little known by many, many of us. We have all experienced the pandemic, Federico, and you remember that the whole world was going upside down because SARS-CoV-2 was causing so much disease in adults. But actually, if you look at the burden caused by RSV in babies, it's exactly the same. A massive amount of babies get infected and get really sick. You and I, as you well know, showed that 1 in 56 children born in this world will be hospitalized for RSV infection in the first year of life. 1 in 56 is really an amazing number. If you go to the rest of the world, where there are no intensive care units to save the lives of these babies, then about 1 in 1,000 children in the world actually die from RSV, making it the second cause of death during infancy, just following malaria. Really amazing amount of burden.
And do you think that, I mean there is a lot of information trying to estimate this burden, no? And as I already mentioned, many papers that you did, others of some common friends like Harris Nair and his group and the consortiums we are part of them. But which are, let's say, the main gaps we may have on the burden? And particularly, do we really have a clear picture of the burden in lower and middle income countries?
So we start to get a feeling for the number of children dying from RSV. But if you would go to the hospitals, it's really an unknown how much disease is seen in the hospitals in lower middle income countries, and virtually nothing is known about RSV at the primary care level or even outside the hospital. We learned through very specific studies that most children die before they can ever reach the hospital. Can you imagine that children do not have access to a hospital while they are so sick? And this is basically what we see in many sub-Saharan countries and South America and Asian countries. So the real burden still needs to be discovered. And that is actually important. One of the big gaps at the moment that we're facing is we don't know the health economic burden caused by RSV in those countries. And basically, that's what we need before we can introduce vaccines in those countries. So that is another big gap that we need to resolve. And the final gap that is global, actually also in our parts of the world, is the causal relationship between RSV and asthma development. Is RSV an acute disease, or is it actually related to a long-term chronic disease? And that is actually very important that we start to think about prevention.
Well, I think that you already touched an important point that you have been also working for many years, no? The, let's say, non-acute burden of RSV, no?
Yes.
And we have strong epidemiological signals relating RSV with within infant, with asthma. But can you further elaborate on that? What are the ideas and which are the facts in this regard about RSV and this, let's say, midterm morbidity?
Well, first of all, we need to look at RSV as a major fire that takes place in the airways of babies. So it's not surprising that these airways are damaged so much that they cause long-term disease. Then what we know is that about half of the children with severe RSV infection will develop recurrent episodes of wheeze in the first years of life, half of them. And then by school age, so let's say about age 5, 6, 7 years, then this association starts to decrease. Then other factors come into play in the development of asthma, but still there is an association that may be lifelong. These very long, lifelong studies have not yet been performed, so we don't know for sure. So the association is strong and clear and dose dependent, so really convincing. What we don't really know is the causal relationship. We did a trial in which we showed that preschool wheeze is causally related to RSV. If you prevent RSV, you also prevent recurrent episodes of wheeze, preschool wheeze. For asthma, we were not powered to really demonstrate that, and we need larger randomized trials, really intervention studies, to finally prove that by preventing RSV, we have the first effective asthma vaccine. So that's really exciting, but still some work to be done.
Well, we will talk about that later, but which are your expectations with the upcoming or the recently licensed vaccines and monoclonal antibodies in this regard? I mean, do you really think that they will be able to have an impact in what we are talking, no? the development of midterm morbidity or not? What's your guess, let's say, because we still don't know for sure yet.
Right. So my guess is that preschool wheeze, so mild asthmatic symptoms before school age, will decrease. I don't think we are going to see major effects beyond school age. I think the world is just more complex than just a single virus playing such a dominant role in such a complicated disease. So it could be that there is a small effect. Maybe there is no effect, but I don't assume a big effect that has been postulated by some people. I assume that there are so many factors involved in the development of asthma that I think we need to be modest. And I also find it important as academics, you and me, that we tell the people what we know much more than what we assume, because assumption may be wrong.
Yeah, that's a wise advice indeed. Well, you already mentioned COVID as a recent experience of what a virus can actually do, but I like to speak with you a little bit about COVID and RSV, you know, and maybe to reflect for a moment, which are the lessons that COVID pandemic taught us about RSV, or even just reminded us about RSV, you know? I mean, we all saw how RSV suddenly disappeared or decreased to a minimum with an important change in the predicted or the expected epidemiology. But other lessons were learned also in these pandemic years, and also in the recent years after the pandemic. What are your thoughts in this regard? Because you have already published several papers talking on this topic.
Right. So someone, a wise man, told me, we need to teach our tongue to say, I don't know. This person is sitting in front of me. Actually, Federico, I think it was your father that told you, and you explained to me, we need to teach our tongue to say, I don't know. And there is a very humbling message here. For 20 years, I told everybody, RSV will never hit in the summer. It's impossible. For some reason, RSV cannot explode in the summer. And I was wrong. The pandemic showed clearly that under these circumstances that we had, RSV can actually hit in the summer. So why was that? Why? What did we see? So under the non-pharmaceutical interventions, so that means hand washing, social distancing, masking, there was no transmission of viruses. In particular, RSV was not transmitted. So we had a complete flat line of RSV transmission, nothing, no transmission at all. So there was a winter period. For the first time in my research career in almost 30 years, we didn't see RSV. And nobody was exposed to RSV. Also, the mothers who were pregnant were not exposed to RSV. So children were born without any antibodies, and the whole society was susceptible to RSV. And then a small spark was enough, like a cigarette lighter in a box of gasoline was enough to set society on fire, because society was susceptible. This is what people call the immunity debt. We did not have immunity as a society. So then we saw this explosion of RSV in the summer. And afterwards, we quickly returned to more or less normal. Not entirely. It's a little bit different in different countries. But this immunity debt is something that we definitely learned. It is possible to get a summer epidemic if you completely stop transmission.
Yeah, and I think that leveraging on what you have just said, the immunity debt applies for other pathogens, no? And we have seen the reemergence and, in some manner, outbreaks of other pathogens, no? Following the pandemic, and although RSV was particularly outstanding, no? And left us an important lesson. And what's your guess about the what is going to happen next with the epidemiology? Do you think we will be returning to the normal RSV epidemiology as we used to know it, or there will be still some transition years to normality, let's say?
Right. So that's a very interesting question. What we see in most countries is that every virus has its own place in the epidemiology. So as an example, in the Netherlands, we first have rhinovirus, then we have RSV, then we have human metapneumovirus, then we have influenza. So each one follows the other. So SARS-CoV-2 needs to get its place in this order, needs to have its own place in the season. And we don't know yet where it will settle, but it may push RSV a little bit up or down the calendar. But I don't think this will be major. So my prediction is that RSV will be a winter season virus, and that we will return to more or less normal seasonality from today onwards.
I hope so, particularly because we are starting now the preventing campaigns, and we don't need additional challenges, no, in trying to guess when to start and when to finish the prophylaxis. And I think that it would be a good news that if this year RSV returns when expected. No?
Exactly. I hope so. Exactly. I will tell the virus to do that.
I'm sure you can be strongly influential with RSV. Yes. And another thing I'd like to ask you or comment with you is, and I think also was outlined with the pandemic lessons or the pandemic knowledge, is about the interaction of RSV with other pathogens, which is not totally new, but I think we so strong, or we, it refreshes us, no, the importance of RSV interaction with other pathogens. So what's your view on that, and what did you particularly learn in this pandemic in this regard?
So interaction with other pathogens, probably pneumococcus has been most studied and is most remarkable. So at the same time that RSV disappeared, pneumococcus disappeared. And at the same time, it reappeared pneumococcus reappeared. A lot of those data are generated by our common friend Ron Dagan from Israel. And what he showed was that it was not related to carriage. So pneumococcal carriage remained normal throughout the pandemic, but invasiveness completely disappeared. So that suggests that RSV is required for pneumococcal infection or pneumococcus to become infectious, to pass the epithelial barrier of the airways and to become a disease. So I think this is really something that we have learned. At the moment, we are not entirely sure of causality here. Again, vaccine studies will tell us more when we are going to prevent RSV, whether we're also going to prevent pneumococcal infection. So that is really exciting stuff that's going to be generated in the coming years.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think that we have now a unique opportunity, no, with all the large trials and all the implementation of these new vaccines to really look to other endpoints, to look for all this additional and direct burden and to really check, because it's the another way to really learn about the RSV itself. So I think that it will be essential to pay attention to that. No? We have also if you remember the MADI paper with the maternal RSV vaccine on RSV and how the impact of the vaccine for all-cause pneumonia was longer than the any effect on RSV itself. No? So I think it's interesting this will be the best possibility to really learn on this. And talking about precisely vaccines and immunization, well, we are now living exciting moments, no? I think we have been hoping for many years to reach the point where we are, no? So I'm sure, I know, and actually we have talked about that, how happy we are, anyone that is working on the field of RSV, with the arrival of new possibilities to really impact the RSV. So let's talk about that. I mean, let's talk first about infants, no? And what are the new tools we have, and what are your thoughts, no? With both the maternal RSV vaccine already licensed in many countries, and the last generation monoclonal antibody, the nirsevimab, that is also licensed and available for use already this season in many countries.
Right.
What's your first thought, your first headline with this?
Finally, after 30 years, we are going to fix the problem. So it's exciting and happy times. And it is even more exciting because there are still some questions. And let me try to explain how I see that, Federico. And I'm very curious to hear your thoughts. Basically, the maternal vaccine and the antibody do the same. They provide antibodies to the young infant to be protected against RSV for the first RSV season. So if we will use the maternal vaccine, what will happen to the preterm babies? At what age would we actually have to add antibodies? We don't know the tipping point of prematurity when we need to start antibodies. We don't know. If we will use the maternal vaccine, should we do that year around, or should we start vaccinating seasonal? So in particular with the antibodies, that's really an important question, year round versus pre-season. I think there are various combinations or options that we can use, and we don't really know what is most effective. We can think of theoretical advantages, but the practicalities of each of these strategies is actually new to the world. Nobody has ever done those types of implementation efforts. So I'm really curious about your thoughts. What would be the best solution, both from a practical and a theoretical expected impact point of view?
Well, it's a difficult question indeed, because I agree with you that it's totally different from a theoretical perspective than from a practical perspective. What I say is that first, the world is big, so there will be options to apply and test different approaches, and hopefully we will have specific data for each of the possibilities. But I agree that the first thing is that probably the maternal approach will need for sure of the monoclonal antibody for the specific cases that you cannot reach that way. Let's say those that do not get vaccinated or the preterms or those that belong to high-risk groups in different seasons than the time they were born. In that regard, the monoclonal antibody might be more selfish, no, in the sense that they can solve from a programmatic perspective themselves the primary prophylaxis of the infants. So that's for me an important difference to take into account. But of course, there are all the other correction factors. Let's say price, let's say applicability, let's say acceptance. So there are many other factors we really need to consider here. And then the other point you touched, I agree, it's complex because about when to do the prophylaxis, particularly with the maternal immunization, if we do it the full year round or if we do seasonal, no? And you could see how GCBI has already announced to be towards the idea of a full year round vaccination. So I think that the only aim for that is to try to improve coverage. I don't see any other advantage of doing a full year round vaccination. No, it's just that it's better to have a higher coverage and you increase the uptake, even if you are protected for a more limited time, than to have a perfect protection, but for a very limited number of newborns. So I think that's the rationale behind. But I'm not sure which will be the actual impact in terms of effectiveness, no, in real life. And this is something we will need to see.
Yeah.
And if we go into the data, sticking with the protection of the infants, when you compare what is available in the literature so far in terms of both nirsevimab and the maternal RSV bivalent vaccine, do you find them comparable or not in terms of efficacy, in terms of knowing that they are different trials, not exactly the same endpoints, but can we say it's fair to make them comparable, or we already can say there are differences?
So the United Kingdom has defined them as comparable, right? We can use either strategy. And in a way, both are very good solutions to a big problem. So from that perspective, you can say they are equivalent. From a programmatic point of view, and maybe even from an impact point of view, there are specific differences. And let me talk about, let's say, advantages of both strategies. I rather talk about advantages than disadvantages.
Yeah.
So the advantage of a maternal vaccine is that we are used to maternal vaccination. We do that for pertussis, we do that for influenza, and it is a robust way to induce antibodies. With the vaccine that is licensed, there does not appear to be a safety signal, and mothers will probably accept the vaccine. I'm not sure all mothers, probably it's not going to be a full coverage. If we look at the antibodies, then that can be considered a standalone solution. You don't need any additional interventions. There might be a small risk of the development of resistance, but it's really, really very, very small. So I think it's a robust solution, and probably the duration of protection for the antibody is a little bit longer than for the maternal vaccine. And it's really taking the child through it the entire first RSV season. If we can frame the antibody as just another pneumonia vaccine during infancy, we may reach very high coverage rates. We may get over 90% coverage, and I think that would be a strategy that I would favor. So I see solutions, and both are very good solutions, but I think it is important to realize that they both have their own advantages.
No, I agree with you that either of both is better than no one of both. No?
Exactly.
That's clear. Yeah. No? And there is a before and after. And I think there is space enough for this and future upcoming possibilities for the infant. That's for sure. And what about, I mean, clearly the first to start using these possibilities, both the monoclonal antibody and the maternal immunization, will be the rich countries, let's say, the well-developed countries. But as you already mentioned in the introduction, you know, the main burden and particularly the mortality occurs in more than 90-something percent in the developing countries. So what do you think? How long it will take us to really make them available for these countries? What do you have in mind? I know you are very sensible to this topic and you're already working on that, but how do you expect this to happen? How do you foresee that this will happen? It will be a hard way, or we will be able to rapidly implement these vaccines also where they are more badly needed?
Right. So acknowledging that this is a very, very, very difficult question, I'm just going to say that I'm confident that we're going to get this very, very soon. So the license of the maternal vaccine has been acquired by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and we're going to produce it and bring it to the developing world. So the vaccine is there, but there are still some issues before we can actually roll it out. One of it is the lack of awareness. So many countries in the world actually don't care about RSV because they don't see it. Actually, they see it, but they don't measure it and they think it's not there. So lack of awareness in the developing world is a major obstacle. For the antibodies, there is an antibody that is in clinical development in phase two. It's called RSM01 by the Gates Medical Research Institute. So that's basically a pharmaceutical company owned by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And they have an antibody that is very, very, very similar, almost indistinguishable from nirsevimab. Mm-hmm. So that the aim of that antibody is solely to bring it to the developing world. So I really think that we should not wait long. And in the coming years, we can expect these vaccines to be rolled out. Even the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations Initiative, Gavi, has RSV on its radar for an investment. And I think people like you and me need to push hard that they actually prioritize RSV for their investment case and basically buy these vaccines for the poorest countries in the world.
Well, you can count on me on this push, that's for sure. And I hope you are right and that this will be not a long and hard journey, but we will be able one way or another to make them available for everybody, no? And particularly for those that need it more. So before closing the podcast, you already mentioned an important topic, and I know again that you have been working hard on that, no? Is the awareness, how aware people is about RSV, and not only healthcare providers, but particularly the potential vaccinees and the potential receptors of treatment and prophylaxis, no? And you have been also an advocate, no, of the patient advisory groups, and you have founded and promoted the European Advisory Group for RSV. So I'd like you to share some thoughts on this regard, how important this is and what can be done in practice in this regard.
So RSV awareness is really critically important for acceptance of a vaccine. And there is no easy solution to raise awareness. So basically it's working hard. And one thing that I would like to add to that little piece of raising awareness through this podcast is that people get the right numbers. Apparently, raising awareness through numbers is very powerful. So 1 in 56 children born term healthy in Europe, in Spain, will be hospitalized for severe RSV infection. 1 in 56. 1 in 1,000 children in the world die from RSV, the second cause of death during infancy. I like to see that people use the right numbers. This is our contribution. You and me worked very hard for many years to generate these few numbers. And this is what I hope our viewers will actually remember.
Well, Thank you very much, Luis. I have really enjoyed this conversation with you, and I hope that the listeners have enjoyed as much as I have sharing this time with you. We could keep talking for
hours. Yeah. Then we take a glass of wine too, but it's always a pleasure talking to you. And I really enjoyed this this podcast. Thank you very much, Federico, for doing this for everybody.
Thank you very much to you, Luis, and thank you very much to everybody for listening. Thanks on behalf of the RSV Academy team, Louis Vuitton included, who is also part of the scientific committee of RSV Academy. And just to remind you all to stay tuned for future podcasts that will follow with Anne Folsi, Octavio Ramilo, Alberto Papi, and many others, as well as many other activities from RSV Academy to immerse yourself in the captivating world of RSV. Thank you very much.
Bye.